Fantasini per Neve. All right, here we go. The long-awaited return of the two goats of the Turin Giants podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, my name is Farhad. I'm the host that loves you most, and I invite you to join us for episode number 238.
Buongiorno, 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 come ha detto lei, buongiorno, e buongiorno.
Buongiorno. Welcome, boys. Rav, Chris. Or as you may know them, the boys from Twitter at iTruth98, the Mr. Inconvenient Truth. That's Chris and Rav at Juve News Live on Twitter. People are excited about this one, as am I, boys. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm real good.
Doing good.
The one with the sexy British accent is Rav. The one with the sexy other accent is Chris.
Go with the North American accent. I don't have the sultry sounds of the beautiful British brother Rav.
Yeah, too kind, man. Too kind.
we're all extremely jealous of that accent. Yes, boys, we have a lot to cover. When I announced you two appearing on the podcast, internet was abuzz, and we have many, many questions to get into. Ways to listen to us is any podcasting platform. Sometimes YouTube. This one is audio only for the sake of our guests to stay anonymous, but it's going to be an entertaining show nevertheless. We're just going to kind of get into it because we don't have much time and there's so much to get to. We're gonna celebrate Ronaldo's birthday today. Read a couple of stats. I'm going to ask the boys, Messi or Ronaldo. We'll get into all of the questions and there will be many, many topics discussed. So welcome. Let's do this. Should we start with Ronaldo's stats at Juventus? Make what you will about Ronaldo's time at Juve, but stats are pretty sweet. And I know they're mostly individual stats, but here we go. In 134 matches, Ronaldo scored a staggering 101 goals for Juventus. In 98 Serie A matches for the club, the Portuguese international scored 81 goals. His tally across three seasons in Serie A read 21, 31, 29. He also scored 14 goals in the Champions League. Ronaldo won 5 trophies with Juve, including 2 Serie A honors, besides 1 Coppa Italia. Records. Ronaldo scripted these stunning records during the 2019-2020 season. In the 2019-20 season, Ronaldo scripted a unique record. He became the fastest player to ever score 50 goals in Serie A history. Ronaldo achieved the feat in 61 Serie A matches. In the same season, the former Real Madrid star scored 37 goals, which was a record netted in one season for Juventus. Your guys' thoughts on Ronaldo's tenure at Juve? Did we enjoy it? Did we not? And please tell me, after all this time, who do you choose, Ronaldo or Messi, as overall, your overall guy? Rav, you go first.
I think I asked a question about this the other day on Twitter about, you know, was it like a success or did people think it was, you know, like he didn't live up to expectation? But the more that I kind of look back on it, if you just look at it in terms of like the numbers and the whole kind of vibe of him being there, it was incredible. It was pretty incredible. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I know that we didn't win the Champions League and, you know, we suffered years afterwards in terms of like the financial repercussions, but just in terms of the buildup of him agreeing to come there, the first press conference, the buildup to him scoring his first goal night against Atletico Madrid, you know, it was something else. Absolutely something else. In terms of like, who's the greatest? I can't separate them. It's such an on the fence pussy answer, but seriously, I cannot separate the two of them. They are just him and Messi, different level, just like a completely different level. And I'm going to not be like one of those fanboys. I'm just going to kind of look back and go, thank God I got to, you know, watch them both in their prime. And one of them came to my club and he did pretty well. So
diplomatic as always. Chris, I know Chris, Chris's bio on Twitter literally says your FC / Ronaldo wars really bore me. And he's always kept that position. But as a voice of reason, tell us, what do you make of Ronaldo's time at Juve?
Well, to begin, I thank you for pointing that out first, so I don't seem hypocritical when I say what I'm about to say. I've never entertained the fanboy discussion. I've never had one side in that arena. But in terms of evaluating Ronaldo as a Juventino, as a Juve player, I have to say the novelty of it has not worn off in the years since his departure. I enjoyed every bit of it. Every bit of it was so fun to me. I hated him so much before he came to Juve, both because he would always kill us, just devastate us on a consistent basis every time we would play him, but also for the very simple fact that he was such a good player that would be so hateable as a person in so many ways, based on what little information trickles out about him and what little we know about him. But you get to pull the veil back a little bit and see a little bit more about the man, the individual, when he's at Juve. And I grew to really like him a lot more. I learned a little bit more about him. And obviously, I think the people who have difficulty, you know, praising his time with Juve, I think sometimes have difficulty differentiating between the frustration with the fanboy sector versus what he actually was able to achieve with the club. And I don't know about you both, but the day or two leading up to his announcement and signing, I was refreshing Twitter at work constantly, all day long. I refreshed about 5 million times waiting for more news to trickle out. And it was one of the most surreal days, surreal moments of my life as a sports fan. So that will never go away. And when you evaluate whether or not it was a successful time at the club, you went over the goal record. You went over some of the things that that were won in his time with the club. No, we didn't win Champions League. But I don't know. I think you can go either way on the discussion, but that's such a prolific goal-scoring record that I think individually, at the very least, it's impossible to say he wasn't a smashing success in Serie A. It was a brilliant period. I just wish we were able to do a little bit more on the European front, because we did have a couple teams that really could have made some runs, at least a lot deeper than we did go.
Yeah, and, you know, hold on one sec. I'm not sure if I'm... No, I'm not muted. So there was an interview with Agnelli when he said, if there was no pandemic, there's no limit to what we could do with Ronaldo. And I think there were... That was a difficult time. Do you agree with Agnelli when he says the pandemic kind of ruined it?
Oh, completely. In terms of, you look at how much we invested in Ronaldo and how much of that revolved around getting people into the stadium and coming to see him, and maybe even having some continuity in terms of the way that we were playing and coaching and all that kind of stuff, that killed it in so many ways. And then all the, you know, the fallout in terms of the salaries and what we were paying and what we weren't paying, all that kind of stuff. Maybe if we'd had, you know, just kind of a bit of a cleaner run there, then, you know, who knows what might have happened. Maybe he would have ended up staying, maybe, et cetera. But yeah, I definitely agree with him to an extent. I think that impacted us in so many ways. And Ronaldo was one of them as well.
And hard to argue. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing was built on a house of cards, and only a global pandemic is what can sort of make everything come undone. I really wish we could go back and sort of get a glimpse at least at what things could have been like had COVID not happened. But at the same time, maybe if Ronaldo didn't leave 1 year prematurely, because we were left in a pretty bad spot for that half season as well before Dusan arrived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. If anything, the pandemic robbed us of a packed Camp Nou, Juventus, Barcelona, duking it out, and Ronaldo, you know, doing a sue in front of one last time in front of the Camp Nou crowd. It's just such a bittersweet moment for me, because what a moment that would have been, you know, seeing the photos of him celebrating in front of the empty stands is just not the same. But it is what it is. Don't blame Ronaldo. He did his job. Maybe blame the people who are building the team around him. Maybe that was not a well thought out project. And you know, it is what it is. We enjoyed it. One last bit of. I want to ask. I don't know who am I going to ask. Let me ask Rav. So Ronaldo equaled the record of Fabio Quagliarella and Gabriel Batistuta of scoring the most consecutive Serie A matches. How many games in a row did he score equaling Quagliarella and Batistuta's record? Do you know?
Oh, dang it. I remember tweeting this when I ran the old account. I think it was something like, oh, I'm going to be so off. I think it was something like 9 or 10.
He scored in 11 straight games. And he scored whopping 16 goals during that period. I mean, goal scoring machine. He was never the same after that. I feel like his tenure at Juventus is very underrated. And we got some, I don't know, it was good. It was fun. It was some really good games, but nothing will top that hat trick against Atletico Madrid. I think we can all agree on that. Anyways, boys.
Sorry, Farhad, Mad, before you move on, one thing that I was rewatching heavily over the past 24 hours, just when we knew we would be discussing Ronaldo a bit today. I was going back and I was reviewing the dance bit that he, Cuadrado, and McKennie had in the train station following the Supercopa win against Napoli in 2020-2021 in the Pirlo year. And I don't know why that's sort of stayed with me, but I suggest everybody kind of go back and revisit that clip because it was really fun watching them sort of just be boys, teammates, friends. And again, this whole aura of Ronaldo being a larger than life figure, he looked like one of the guys in that clip more so than I ever saw him during his time at Juve. And I always sort of reflect on that and enjoy that clip. So just a side note, because I really like going back to that and revisiting.
It's definitely, because I was going to finish with my thought and you completely, you know, you perfectly encapsulated it. And he was a great teammate. I mean, we're so many of us didn't like Ronaldo because of his history against Juventus and stuff like that. He was fun to hate, but as a teammate, there was never anything except for leaving early and, you know, taking his career to United. Overall, he had a good time. Like you said, he was one of the boys. So,
Listen to the comments from all the players that played alongside him, they have nothing but good things to say about him. You know, they're just professional, dedicated, inspirational. He did this, he did this. Some of the younger players who were in the Primavera at that time, you know, like he would take time to sort of speak to them, you know, take pictures, shirts, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you can't question that side of it.
And don't kill me for saying this, by the way, but I as in far as this silly Messi versus Ronaldo thing, I'll say just as a casual onlooker, as a Juve fan, I feel like Ronaldo struck more fear into my heart when we would play Real than Messi would when we would play Barca. And that's perhaps probably just because we had a slightly better record versus Barca in our peak years. But I would say, you know, the fact that people entertain that debate is still so silly to me. Anyway,
it still goes on. Yeah. It's been a Ronaldo minute here on the Turin Giants podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Now let's get into the meat of the issue. There's a lot of questions from the audience, and they want to know your guys' opinion. We'll just get into it. So Rami, he replied to our thread when I asked for a question last time. We never got to it because he was too late. So I promised him to get to his questions from the last podcast. By the way, Matt and Gio, that was a fun one. Always appreciate having those guys on. If you want to go back and listen to those podcasts, to that podcast. And by the way, whoever's leaving the 5-star reviews on Spotify, we really appreciate it. I've never really officially asked for you guys to rate the show. But hey, if you see it, if you enjoy it, drop us a 5-star review. I'd appreciate that. Anyways, Rami's question. It's two questions. So we'll kind of combine them. So I'll read them both, and then we'll see what we can do with that question. So would you keep Chiesa if a 50 million euro offer is tabled? And sell or keep Dušan if an offer of 60 plus million arrives? So basically, let's do, who would you keep for a lot of money? I feel like 50, 60 mil, let's just say the offers are equal. In this economy, in this current state of Juve, Chris, I want to see, in the long run, who would you keep, Chiesa or Vlahovic?
It's a tough question. And love Rami, by the way. I have this discussion with him about Dušan pretty often, I feel like. I'm really not sure without knowing what the club's financial situation is. I suspect we're not in the greatest of states right now, so I'll keep that in mind when answering. But as I sort of look at the landscape of our squad, I think Chiesa and Dušan are the last people that I would want to sacrifice. We have some forward potency, but I don't think that losing one of them and simply replacing with a replacement level player and moving the money around the squad in different areas necessarily makes us better. I think it opens up an even bigger hole in attack in some ways. So I understand this is a sort of polarizing issue among many within the fan base, but I think Chiesa as a player, I'm not selling under any circumstances unless he continues to struggle to stay fit on a consistent basis and play a full 90, which is certainly valid if that's a concern that many have. And regarding Dušan, I think there's just far too much talent that he shows on a sort of semi-frequent basis enough at this point where I think he's shown world-class potential, and in a slightly better situation with a slightly more consistent and improved supporting cast, maybe he can show that on a more regular basis, but certainly he needs to be a little bit better in his own right as well. So I for me, I'm not selling either of them. If I have to find money, I think I'll find money elsewhere in my fantasy land world here. But I think both I am keeping and I am focusing elsewhere on how to fix the problems we have.
So, Rob, let me ask you, since you're in the know, you have to be up to date. And by the way, please check out one of the best, if not the best, Juventus news page on Twitter at Juve News Live. If you're listening to this, you probably already follow that page. But anyway,
the best by far. It's not even close.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, guys.
I mean, anything Rav touches is gold. Rav, tell me, is there what's the from reliable sources? Are you hearing anything, any interest from either one of those players?
I think in terms of the newspaper stuff, there's always the same shitty rumors, but you can never read too much into it because it's always based around this team in the Premier League needs a striker. Who can they go after who may be gettable? Oh, Vlahovic. So there's never really that much truth to it. I haven't read anything about Chiesa or Vlahovic leaving or that Juve would entertain offers for them. I don't know if that's Juve just being smart in terms of just saying, look, we do not want to sell our players. And then if the right offer comes in, they might consider it. I think in terms of like sellable assets, in terms of the players that Juve could cash in on and make money, I think realistically, there's only really three or possibly four that would make a lot of money, which is Bremer, Chiesa, Vlahovic, and maybe Matthias Süle. But again, you're not going to get, I don't know, maybe 30 billion, something like that.
It won't be like major money.
Exactly. And when you look at the team in terms of the way that we've done business in the past, like selling Pogba for 100 million or, just being a bit smarter in terms of how we move players, if we're not really up against it, if we're not really cash strapped, if we've got this team that is, like we've got young players all around Serie A and a couple in Serie B who are doing pretty well, and we don't necessarily need to kind of go out and spend big, then why do we need to sell Vlahovic or Chiesa? Why don't we just keep them both? And like Chris was saying, there's other ways that we can cut corners, other ways that we can generate income. We don't really need to spend too big in the summer. Not that I can see. There might be maybe a couple of players here and there, but we've got a pretty decent starting 11 in terms of who can play week in, week out. Yes, we got the Champions League next season, God willing. So maybe we need to add a little bit more, but this experiment in terms of investing in youth and playing youth, we're second in the league. The players that we've loaned out are doing fantastically at the clubs that they're playing in Serie A. why don't we just continue this trend? It's worked for us up until this point. Just keep using the youngsters. Don't go out. Don't spend big. We've got this next gen team. We set it up for a reason. And that was to save us money in the long term, to have talents that either we bring into the first team or that we sell on for a big profit. We don't need to do anything. Just like Chris was saying, if the money situation is okay, if we balance the books enough and we're doing well enough and we're kind of at that break-even point or close enough to it, then yeah, I don't see a point in selling either of those players.
Well, speaking of Chiesa, I have a question, another question from Joshua Fontaine. He's asking if this Chiesa contract situation is slowly turning into Dybala one. You guys have any comparison? What was going on with Dybala? Does that look like that's what's happening with Chiesa?
I don't think it's going to get that bad. I think Chiesa being an Italian player, being represented by an actual football agent, not a used car salesman or whatever that guy was.
Ooh, I think, snap.
Sorry. But I think they've invested big in Chiesa. They spent a long time paying for him. He's still got a lot of promise. I think he's still got a way to go. I don't think they're going to let it drag on too much further because his contract ends in 2025. So they really need to do something the next couple of months. Otherwise, they head into the summer in a really tough situation. So my hope is that it is resolved by May. And I haven't read anything, but just my gut tells me that they will work to get that resolved. It feels like they've done all the other ones that maybe weren't quite as pressing. And then the kind of big sort of cherry on the end of the top of the cake, once we've confirmed that we're in second place or whatever and into the Champions League, will be, ta-da, is a contract renewal for
Chiesa. Ta-da, indeed. Chris, what's your, before I get into the question from our friend Andar, Chris, tell me about your Allegri thoughts. Just a couple words. We haven't really spoken to you about Allegri in a while. The current state of Juve, how important is Allegri right now and for the next season if he stays? And then we'll get, you know what, let me just ask the question. Well, you know, I'll give you time to think about it. So at Andar Sofyan, our friend from Indonesia, he's asking, if Allegri says no to extend his contract, who are the candidates that suits Juventus, you guys think? Let's just say the salary cap is around 3 to 4 million euros net yearly. Thank you and love you guys. We love you too, buddy. A lot of it is forget the word. I apologize. But anyways, 3 to 4 million euros. Who do you go after, Chris? If you go after anyone, if you want to keep Allegri, talk to me.
Okay. I go a little bit back and forth on the topic of Allegri. I don't know. I get accused of being like some Allegri stan all the time. I don't know why this always seems to happen, just because I preach pragmatism, I guess, when evaluating the head coach position. But I started this past off season thinking that it was probably best that we move on from Allegri, both for him, for us. Maybe we both part ways after a really tumultuous season and we kind of move on, both of us with a clear head. But Max, to his credit, he stuck firm. He wanted to come back. He wanted to work through after weathering the storm. And I think he's placed us in a position based on results where we're punching maybe slightly above our weight, despite the fact that I don't think we have a poor squad, but an incomplete squad at least, where we're very much in a title race against a team that is at least a year or two advanced beyond our current position in terms of squad development and squad completion in Inter. So I think, to his credit, he has earned everything that he's gotten in terms of praise over the course of this season. I think it's going to be very difficult to gauge whether or not we should move on at this current point. I think there's a lot more to be revealed. And I think ultimately we're trending more towards a place where he will be back next year, assuming he wants to be back. And I think there's no reason why we should entertain moving on if we're consistently in this title race right to the very end, and potentially even winning the Coppa Italia, which I think we're very poised to win based on the bracket remaining. So I think you gauge whether or not it's something that we need to do, a move we need to make. I think we'll wait and see, but certainly after a loss to Inter, it's not confirmation that we need to move on from him yet. I think it's ridiculous and reactionary. So I think I would just preach that we just remain patient, evaluate with a full sample size over the course of this season. I don't think anything has been fully revealed yet. And if we do move on and if we want to entertain that conversation, again, it's going to be very difficult in my mind to ever envision a non-Italian manager at Juve. And if that's the case, some of the realistic options to me don't seem very viable or exciting. I think maybe you go the Thiago Motta option. You roll the dice a little bit with an ascending manager like him. Or you go for a veteran manager, and there's certainly plenty of those in Italy as well. So I'm just uninspired by some of the present options. I think they're all risky in their own right. I think Allegri being the devil we know for the most part, at least right now, is what I would sort of lean towards.
Gotcha. So my question, I was wondering what others think about this. Obviously, Inter game, big game over the weekend we have to touch on. What did you guys think of the coaching of the game, tactics and everything that was presented to us fans to kind of mull over? What did you guys think of Allegri's preparation and the actual performance as a coach?
I think he did probably what I expected him to do, which was to go there to set up kind of identical to them in a certain extent, to sit deep, to try and play on the counter. And if we get a point out of it, then great. I don't think he was necessarily going there to sort of win it. I think it was more about stopping Inter from winning the game. And that was kind of the way the first half played out. I think they had something like 80% possession after 20 minutes. It was something ridiculous. And you could see that they, and it really pains me to say this, I hate saying it, but they were definitely the better team. They were more fluid. They're far further along in terms of their progression. So I think he kind of wanted to just nullify them. He didn't want to try and go toe-to-toe. He wanted to soak up pressure a little bit and hopefully just kind of land a punch at some point. And that felt like most of the first half. And then I think the second half, we were much, much better in terms of just like being more proactive, actually pressing them and pushing them back in their half, taking a lot more chances, trying to create something. I mean, it was a lot of sort of sterile possession. We didn't really do much with the ball when we had it. I think we only had that one really clear-cut chance with Vlahovic, and that was in the first half. So it's hard to be sort of too difficult on him. I mean, too tough on him, because I can't really think what more he could have done with the team that he's got other than, you know, kind of go kamikaze and sort of try and get an equalizer and then just leave massive gaps at the back. I think he did the best he could. I would have liked the first half to be a little bit more, you know, less of us sitting back, maybe a bit more of us trying to kind of go toe-to-toe with them in the midfield at the very least, even though they've got a better midfield than us. But yeah, overall, I think it was okay. It's hard to be sort of too critical. We came away with a goal that was an own goal that, and again, this might be a bit controversial, but you could see that Marcus Thuram might have handled the ball in the build-up. So, you know, if that had been reviewed, maybe that might have taken the goal away. 1-0 defeat.
I do think it stings a lot more because the goal was kind of a fluke. And it ended 1-0. I just feel like if Chiellini was there protecting, that ball would not have gotten in. Chris, what do you think of the substitutions? A lot of people are, including me, are baffled by the substitutions in 89th minute, where we clearly needed reinforcements, and we saw our new guy Alcaraz playing, and you could see right away, you know, playing through the middle, kind of baffled them. And if he didn't have 4 minutes to make a difference, I feel like we'll see more of him. I really did enjoy it. Chris, what did you think of Allegri's game plan?
Yeah, I'm left a little bit confused by only that from the Allegri perspective. I think in general, the overall execution of the match was not ideal from an individual standpoint on field, collectively on field. I think in general, Inter showed their quality. Pains me to say just as much, Rav. I really have to say, though, I think despite the fact that it was, as you said, it was kind of a fluky goal that put Inter over the top and earned them the result, I think it's – it's fair to say that on the run of play, in terms of chances created, big moments, Chesney bailed us out of at least two moments with two very big saves. Bremer had the very big recovery play on defense as well to stifle Thuram earlier. So I'm thinking there were two or three big opportunities where Inter should have absolutely done better, if not for brilliant individual play at the back. So I think it was a fair result, sadly, but predictably cagey from Allegri from the outset. And I think we've downloaded enough information on him as our manager at this point that we know how he approaches these matches, even when we were massively overwhelming the opposition with our talent, with our experience. It's generally the same sort of way we always approach these matches. And I think it's starting the match out well and sort of trying to build as the match opens up a little bit. And unfortunately, I think when we fell behind, the game script sort of went off, and now we're just sort of grasping at straws, trying to reclaim control of the match. And I think that's the one criticism I have of Allegri, as I have many criticisms of all the players as well in this match. I think he could have reacted a little bit quicker, a little bit better, but ultimately, I mean, it's all negligent at this point. I don't see too many things that I would really key in on from his perspective. So,
gotcha.
Unfortunate result, but the title is not over. The title race is not over, I should say. And so we go again, Udinese on Monday, I believe.
Yeah, Chris is certainly, is level-headed, and he knows that Inter can slip up any minute. But my problem is that if we slip up, it would be easier for them to catch up to us than like we did. We slipped up, and I just think it's going to take a lot more effort to get back level with them. Hopefully that happens.
I think that's the problem too, is that the margin for errors going forward, it becomes so much slimmer when you lose a match like this. It really sets us back a little bit for sure.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. So these questions coming in from our buddy Amit and Mike at Juventino MC, they're pretty much the same. And I feel like a lot of people want to know what your opinions are. Basically, I'll combine the two questions in one. If this season is a failure, is this season a failure if Juventus don't win the Scudetto? And basically what Amit is asking, he's also saying, if someone offered you a second place in a league and a Coppa Italia win for Juventus at the beginning of the season, would you have taken it? Rav?
I think if you frame it, you know, like in terms of how last season went, then you have to kind of be a little bit more, you got to kind of take your Juventino glasses off and just kind of think about everything that happened between 2022 and 2023. So we had that serious Chiesa injury. We had the Pogba extortion case. We had that injury where it effectively ended his season. We had the Plus Valenza case going in the background. The board then resigned. We had the points taken off. The points were then returned. We had that dreadful Champions League season. Then the points were taken off again. There was the whole thing with the Super League going on in the background. Then we're kicked out of Europe by UEFA with the whole one-year European ban. Then there's right at the start of the season, the Pogba doping issue. Bonucci wants to sue the club. All this kind of stuff. I can't think of another club that has gone through what we've been through in the space of the last sort of 12 to 18 months. So if you frame it with all that and you go, right, this is the reality of what we're facing. Yes, we're Juventus. Winning is all that matters. Completely get that. That is the way that we are. But frame it with all the shit that's gone on. Would you take second place in a Coppa Italia? Fuck yeah. I'd take that in a heartbeat. If you tell me all that stuff has happened, how miserable, like we all went through it. Like, you know how miserable you were as a fan when you're waking up every day and you're checking the news and going, what new hell awaits us today? And it's like, oh, you know, the guy who basically guided us through all this success for the last 10 years has resigned and is being bullied out of the project that he started. And oh, there's injury and this and that. So with all that, plus you factor in that Inter have basically been building up to this. They've been investing. They're far further down the sort of line in terms of their progress. If you take all of that into account, take off the Juventino glasses, I would take second and Coppa Italia, and I would call that a success based purely on what we've been through in the last, like I say, 12 to 18 months. And I know I don't like saying that because we're used to winning, and that's the mentality that we enjoy. But with everything that's happened, yeah, I would definitely call that a success.
Rav, I don't appreciate you telling me to take my Juventino glasses off twice in one sentence, okay?
I refuse.
Yes, sir. Chris, I want to direct people toward, obviously, a lot of people follow at Juve News Live, Rav's account. I do want to direct people towards at Truth 98. I mean, it's such an amazing account to follow. I want to read one of Chris's tweets not too long ago, where he says, and I want you to expand on that. Do people really think that just because a coach says top four is the goal, that's the truth? The way some people hang on to every line said publicly by coaches or players remains an enigma to me. Juve and Allegri want the title this season as much as you or I do. Don't be naive.
That sounds a little harsh now when you read it out loud like that. I really, when I put these tweets out, I think I it usually comes on the heels of me reading an endless amount of other tweets from other accounts that I either know and respect, or even the ones that I'm unfamiliar with that are all seemingly saying the same thing. And it's just more a matter of perspective. And there's so many times when I think after a big loss like the Inter match, when emotions are running so high, I think it's so much better to just take a deep breath, sit back in your chair, and just sort of understand what the lay of the land now is after this match. Ultimately, not that much has changed. The title race is still very much on. We've put ourselves in a more precarious situation, absolutely. But then when you see these post-match press conferences for managers who are always constantly trying to put the onus and responsibility of winning the title on their opposition as opposed to putting that pressure on them and their team, I don't know why we forget about that when it comes time to really evaluate the situation for what it is. I don't think Allegri is at Juve and winning all the trophies that he's winning thinking, you know, let me go into this season just trying to avoid finishing out of a Champions League position. You can bet as much as anybody that he wants to win as much as the players want to win. It's just silly to me to think that he's going into this saying, you know what, I'm really going to hang my hat on a top four finish in a year when we're not playing in the Champions League and our only opposition is Inter, who, albeit very good this season, is still, attainable in terms of a team we can hang with. Certainly wasn't the case when we played them the other day, but certainly would be the case over the course of a 38-game season, given the circumstances. So I'm just baffled when I see people saying, you know, Allegri doesn't want us to win the title, or they don't want to win the title. We need a change of mentality. That's not the message he's saying to the team. I think we can all very confidently say when the team is training, when they're amongst themselves, they're training to try and win the Scudetto this year. I mean, I don't think we need to be in the room or need to be a fly on the wall in order to know this. It's just the situation is what it is. We're not playing with the distraction of European football. The goal is to win the title. And if we don't win it and we win the Copa and we finish second, like Rav says, I don't think that's the worst outcome in the world as a fan, but certainly I think we're going for it this year.
I mean, Go ahead, Rav.
I was just going to say, first of all, everyone should go read Chris's tweets just in general, post-match, just day-to-day observations. 100% go and read what he has to say, because he is the voice of calm. He's logical. He makes so much sense. And I read so much shit on Twitter, and then I go and read Chris's tweets, and I'm like, right, now I can leave Twitter. I'm calm. Everything is right in the world. The other thing
Thank
is,
you, brother.
No, it's 100% truth. I'm not just saying it. The other thing that Chris really rightly touched on, and this is so true, Allegri is not saying these things because he believes that. You cannot think that someone who is coaching Juventus thinks that top four is okay. If you believe that, you are so deluded. Instead, go and look at the reactions of Inter. Go and look at the reactions of Inzaghi, of Marotta. They are so pissed off with the stuff that Allegri has been saying. They are desperately trying to keep their calm and keep their composure. The fans are riled up. They react to anything that Allegri says. Everything is it gets under their skin, and he's doing a brilliant job of it. And the only people that are kind of not really sort of taking the whole sort of mentality of what he's trying to do away from what he's saying is the Juventus supporters, well, on Twitter at least, people on Twitter are so worked up about, he's top four this and top four that. He's doing a fantastic job of just deflecting everything onto Inter and just playing it calm and steady and just downplaying it as much as he can. But like Chris said, of course they want to win. The players are saying it because they're not as nuanced and perhaps they haven't got the years of experience that Allegri has, but he knows what he's doing. And if you're getting worked up by him, you know, saying Champions League is the objective, then, you know, you got to look at it a bit closer in terms of what's happening. So
I think we can all agree Allegri is a certified troll. He's such a manipulator. I truly do enjoy completely. His press conferences and his facial expressions and the way he speaks is just, you're right. It's a lot of mind games and it's chess, not checkers, baby.
As he's lost his hair, he's gotten more fun and more comfortable in these press conferences.
Completely. He's truly enjoying. But just to reiterate, for a rebuild year, it ain't too bad. Let's just be honest. You know, I personally, coming into the season, nobody expected a battle with Inter, and it's still gonna go on. You know, the loss hurt, but I do feel like slip up is coming, and we're gonna be on the same, you know, same train. You know, predicting a dogfight until the end. It ain't over, basically. And like I said, it's a year of the rebuild, and with our team and with a lot of youngsters, which I do want to mention, and I want to get your guys' opinion on who are the top guys for you as far as youth, and who do you see being a big part of this team, and who do you not see being a part of the team? Who's a youngster that is maybe underperforming for you guys? Give me one name.
I'll say Miretti. That's not to say that I'm a hater or anything like that. I'm not one of these people that kind of likes to complain about young players because they're young players. They've got so much development to do. But Miretti, sometimes he can just linger on the ball a little bit too much. He can be a little bit aimless, but he's what, 21? He's still a kid. He's got a long way to go. So I don't like criticizing the young players too much, but yeah, I think he has been not disappointing. He just needs to work on a few aspects of his game.
Underperforming maybe from what we expected, right?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
Agree completely. Chris. And honestly, I actually think Miretti's forced to soak up a lot of the minutes that probably would be going towards Fagioli if he were available too, because Nico's a couple more years onward in his development. I think probably we would be seeing him feature a lot more heavily if he were available. So Miretti's kind of thrust into this position. And like Rev said too, these are the sort of wages that a young player goes through. And he's kind of in this 3 to 4 or 3 to 5 game run of form where I think he's performing a little beneath his standard that we've grown accustomed to, at least. But he'll be fine in the long run, I think.
If anything exciting came out of these last 3 or 4 years, is definitely is the next gen. Am I right? I mean, it's such a beautiful project right now, and other teams from Europe are noticing. And again, pandemic could have taken Ronaldo away from us, but at the same time, the pandemic and the financial stress kind of made us make these decisions as far as youth. And listen. Tell me last time you were excited about a youth project that was a Juventus youth. You know, people bring up Marchisio still, Giovinco, but look at the crop we have now. And hopefully that's a long-term thing where we keep developing these youngsters. And your thoughts on Yıldız, you know, shined for a couple of games, but was he not ready to face Inter? What are your thoughts on his performance from the last game and just overall? Rav and then Chris, we'll go with Rav first.
I think that it was definitely a big occasion. I think he's still young. I find it so difficult to be too critical of these players because they have, like, Yıldız hasn't played a game of that magnitude yet. He played in the Turkey against Germany game, which is a friendly, which I think might have been one of the biggest games he's featured in up until that point. But in terms of playing for Juve, that was probably the biggest game that he's played for us yet. And again, when the rest of the team doesn't play that well and there's not that much of a creative spark and he's kind of struggling and he's playing up against these really experienced center backs, then I think it was hard for him to kind of make an impact. But I wouldn't level it on him alone. I would just say that it's one of those games that is going to be a good sort of learning experience for him, but it's a combination of everyone. The whole team didn't sort of carry themselves that well, with the exception of maybe Chesney and Bremer. But you know, it's just good experience for him. It's a good opportunity. I'm not going to be too hard on him. He'll probably come back and score a brace when we play against Udinese on Monday. So, you know, you live and learn.
Great on the job learning experience, I think. And he was a little bit of a spark in terms of individual moments with dribbles and trying to play progressively, doing his job essentially, and doing it about as effectively or ineffectively as everybody else on the field for the most part, unfortunately. And I think, like we said, he could probably take a lot away from this sort of match going forward. And it was interesting to me too afterwards to see Del Piero even come out and say, you know, he and Dusan were very isolated up top without much support from the midfield or the wide players. So difficult sort of situation for a player like Yildiz when you know we're going to be going into the match playing compactly and not playing a very forward and progressive sort of style on the road against our top title contender opposition. So, like I said, learning experience, I think that's what we take away from this one.
So let's kind of go through, we're about to wrap up this very good episode of the Turin Giants podcast, but let's go through and compare Inter's schedule and Juventus' schedule, because from now on we will have to kind of keep an eye on their schedule as well. So Juventus, like Rav mentioned, Monday, February 12th, we play at home against Udinese, and then Saturday, February 17th, we play away at Verona. February 25th, at home against Frosinone, and then finally March 3rd. I know we're way ahead of schedule here, but Napoli, Juventus at Stadio Maradona. So March 3rd. And then comparing Inter's schedule, kind of same period of time. They're playing at the Olimpico against Roma February 10th. And then they're playing February 16th on Friday against Salernitana at home. So that's easy 3 points, I guess. And then Inter Atletico Madrid, because they are actually in the Champions League. And then February 25th, away at Lecce. Kind of similar, except, you know, Champions League sprinkled into that schedule. But, yeah, compare and contrast. Let's see if we can catch them, right?
100%.
That Lecce away fixture is apparently a very tricky one now.
Yeah, Lecce are not the pushover. I got to say, there's quite a few teams in Serie A this season that have kind of surprised. It's not just the big teams that can be a potential banana skin. So like Chris was saying earlier, I don't think the title race is done yet. That's why I'm not kind of too defeated by the loss to Inter. There's still plenty of games left to play. And, you know, look at what happened on the 5th of May, 2002. So there's hope. There's hope.
Rav, you heard it here first. Rav predicted another last day debacle. That would be awesome, actually. Imagine all the complaining.
Dodo Angora.
Speaking of complaining, I felt that the referee did a great job. Except for, of course, there was a couple of slip-ups. But my biggest fear before the game was that he would influence the game in a way where it would ruin it. But thankfully, it was just, you know, people were upset. I know Chris was upset. No, that wasn't you. I apologize. But people were upset about an early yellow to Vlahovic. I feel like that would kind of keep him on a short leash just for complaining. I feel like that was kind of a soft yellow. But did well, Mr. Sideburns. You know, I don't know that the ref's name, but Mr. Sideburns did well. Chris, we know where you have to go. We appreciate you, buddy. Let's not make it that long again before you show up on the podcast. And I know you're very apologetic every time because it had been a while. We appreciate Absolutely. You. Please follow Chris at iTruth98 if you want a good Twitter experience, which is so hard to come by nowadays. Twitter has become pretty pretty toxic. But if you want a good follow, Chris is the man. Chris, any last words?
Nope. Just thank you very much, boys. Always a pleasure to be on with the two of you and everyone on the cast. Always a great time. And I'm sorry for cutting it a bit short on my end today, but I'm already looking forward to the next time. Forza Juve.
I appreciate you. Forza Juve. Forza Chris. Rob, Chris. We'll
take care, Rob. Always a pleasure too, my friend.
Absolutely. Anytime, brother.
Chris, let's wrap it up. I mean, Chris, Rob, let's wrap it up. Anything going on your end, on Twitter? Is there any interesting transfers brewing? I just saw, cruise level, rumors are kind of picking up. What do you think about that?
Nah, it's bullshit. I read it earlier. The story this morning was from Gazeta, and they said that Juve want Toni Kroos, but it's really unlikely. And then Calcio Mercato, who are probably the less reliable, kind of come out a few hours later and say, oh, it could happen, it could happen. And then there's rumors in Spain saying he's going to renew his contract for, you know, another year or 2 years with Real. So I think it's just another one of those situations where the player maybe sort of leaks something and newspapers run with it, or just newspapers have, you know, rubbish to print. I don't think we'd be able to afford a player like Toni Kroos. So yeah, there's nothing really. I haven't read, I know it's a way to go yet, but I haven't really read any kind of transfer rumors linking Juve to anyone particularly big. I think if they do sign anyone, it's going to be these kind of promising players from teams like Bologna. You know, there's some interesting players there. We're hopefully going to get Matteo Sulo back, Barranquilla. We've got Facundo Gonzalez playing as Samp, who will probably go out on loan again, but we've still got to figure out what happens with Pogba. So, you know, there's no immediate need to go out and sign anyone too expensive. Just maybe a creative midfielder, but that's about it, I think.
It'll be a hot summer. Let Juntoli cook, as they say, right?
Always is.
Rob, thank you so much, brother. Always a pleasure. Hopefully see you soon in person.
Absolutely.
and on our podcast. Boys and girls, thank you so much. Hope you guys enjoyed this. Rob, please don't log out before I... Sorry.
No worries.
I know I should. This is kind of behind the scenes, but the upload needs to finish.
So good.
Boys and girls, Turin Giants hoodie, the original. You've been requesting the restock. It's on turingiants.com. Please check it out. It's our most popular hoodie. Great quality, great design. Turingiants.com. Please check it out. And as I always say, best way to support this podcast is just to buy some stickers. And I appreciate all the orders for the last couple of weeks. Rav, thank you. Anything? Any last words on the podcast before we log out?
Follow Chris and follow Turin Giants and Forza Juve.
You're too nice. Forza Juve indeed. Check on your friends. Stay hydrated and Forza Juve. That'd be great. Con il contasini per Merve,